Bears Roundtable is powered by Xfinity.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Hallis Hall, the PNC studio here in Lake Forest, as we bring you another edition of Roundtable with a very special guest here today. The man loves the game of football, but we certainly know him from his excellence on the ice and in the broadcast booth for multiple outlets, including Comcast Sportsnet Chicago, the analyst for Chicago Blackhawks hockey, and the 16-year NHL veteran, Eddie Olczyk, here with us. This, of course, is Tom Thayer, my broadcast partner on News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM, WBBM, and the senior writer of ChicagoBears.com, Larry Mayer. And we come to find out, Tom, he did have a childhood friend. It happened to be Eddie Olczyk.
Right.
Tell us the relationship, because you've been going around Hallis Hall for weeks telling us about your friendship with Eddie Olczyk.
I don't mention many people about our friendship, strangely enough, but we played Little League baseball together. We were teammates, I believe, on the Niles Giants. I know a lot of people think that you grew up in the South Suburbs, but from Niles, and I can tell you that he was a pitcher, I was a catcher, first time and only time I caught, because he threw the ball hard, and I can tell you that he put a lot of kids from Little League into soccer. Because he was a man among boys as a Little League
player. What's
your
remembrance? I know that you kind of drew back on your memory bank about, you know, hearing the name and then going, wow, I think we played together.
Yeah, well, first off, thanks a lot for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. And it was funny. I just, every time I go over to my mom and dad's house, my mom's got all my baseball pictures, my brother's pictures and everything else. And I look, and just one day I just looked and just kind of caught Larry – kind of caught my attention in a picture. And then one day I was watching TV and then I heard Larry Mayer and I just kind of put two and two together. And I mean, this is after a long time ago. I mean, almost 35, 40 years. And I asked somebody and I said, is that the Larry Mayer from Niles? And somebody shook their head. I'm like, wow. So I said, I got to reconnect with Larry. So, you know, he called a good game. I shook him off a few times.
I shook him off.
A lot of this, you know, but he gave me a nice target, and he was a good framer. He knew how to, you know, take that play.
He did it just for the Bubs daddy at the end of the game. He just wanted the big pack of gums.
Like, a lot of kids don't know what Bubs daddy is anymore. But
I think we used to go to either Tasty Pup or Tommy Tucker's.
I think 7-Eleven, too.
That's the great part about this, all you guys growing up in the Chicago area and with great athletes from the far northern suburbs to the far southern suburbs to the western suburbs. And you two are two shining examples, though, of homegrown guys that made it great and won championships and then have had second careers calling the sports you guys love.
Well, that's, you know, you talk about growing up as a kid, being a professional player and being a coach. What does your mom save the most of? What information did they hang on to, and what do they enjoy most about your career?
Well, I think it's probably, Tommy, I mean, you would know this. I mean, I think it's the people that you come in contact with, you know. Like, I mean, if I can't remember yesterday, let alone what happened 10 years ago, but my dad, who just retired after working in the grocery store business for 55 years, if I would drop a name to my dad, like I would call my dad and say, yeah, you know, did I play? Yeah, you played with him as a 12-year-old on the Chicago Jesters, and then you played baseball with him with the Mighty Meteors, or you played with him in Palos Heights. And my dad can remember everything. So I think it's just really, more than anything else, I think it's the people in the past that we've traveled as a family that they take me back to and remind me.
Well, I can't think of anyone else in Chicago sports than you two guys that grew up in Chicago, ended up playing for your hometown team and playing very well, and then staying with the team as a broadcaster later. I mean, is there anyone that comes to mind to you? And how fortunate do you guys feel?
They're the rare guys. I mean, you guys, and all the analysts we have in town, and there's great ones, obviously, but you guys both won championships in your sport. You both played, as you said, great from the early days of their relationship with the franchise, you with the Blackhawks, and this guy starting with the Bears and winning a Super Bowl in his first year, but then having the good fortune of calling a Super Bowl again in 2006 for you here at the Bears. You, of course, calling Blackhawks championships. I mean, crazy. That's great lineage right there.
But I think I know me. I'm still a fan because the first time I ever had my picture in the paper in Associated Football was when I won the pass, punt, and kick. And I remember that for my whole life. And it kind of puts you into that, just that excitement stage that you want us to continue happening. That's the thing about it, is as much as you get a chance to broadcast, it's still the fan in us that we admire the teams the most. If you get a chance to go and meet a Matt Forte, even though I've been part of a guy like Walter Payton. I get excited meeting Matt. So I think for me, the fan in me is still grows as much as anything.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, you develop relationships. And I think there's always that respect factor, Jeff, I think, to what you're talking about is that is being former players. And most players know. I just know what it is in hockey. I don't know what it is in football or other sports, but there has been a disconnect over, I think, the last little while of the players of today maybe really not knowing the guys of yesterday. I'm not just talking about the superstar players. I'm just talking about guys that had great careers. Tom Thayer in the National Football League. Myself that played 16 years in the National Hockey League. So I think that when you do have developed those relationships, there is that respect and that credibility where, you know, you could talk to guys and be able to have some dialogue
with them. I'm certain that they know more about you, the younger guys, now that you're calling. They know much more about you as a broadcaster.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no
and
question.
They have to take the
no
time
question.
To look up
yeah,
your career,
Yeah, without
right?
a doubt. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's like, hey, aren't you the guy that does EA Sports? Are you the guy that's the voice and the face there? And
which
and
you are for 2015.
Yeah, and you're the TV guy, right? Yeah, that's me. Yeah. I mean, I did play for 16 years a long time ago. I know it was black and white. And I know Tommy grew up used to watch me on TV. So, but I mean, that's just the reality of it because, I mean, I've been retired since 2000 now, which I really, it's hard to believe. I'll be a broadcaster as long as I was a player now. And that's really hard to believe.
I think you're following the same path as John Madden, it seems like right now. Everybody knows from the video games and everything. But yeah. I mean, when the Hawks took you in the draft, everybody thinks Michael Jordan was the only third overall pick, right?
Yeah.
Eddie Olczyk.
Yeah, right. I'd like to think that I had a hand in building of the United Center. Maybe just, you know, maybe one of the, maybe the door handles going in. That's all Michael Jordan
must have been
for sure.
Crazy, but, though, when the Hawks picked you. What was that?
I mean, that was the ultimate. I mean, Larry, I didn't know anything about a draft as a kid. All I ever wanted to do is, I mean, honestly, I wasn't tough enough to play football. My dad wanted me to be a football player. Before I went to bed for about, I think it was probably from I was 7 years old till I was 13, my dad would throw me 100 passes a night in our front room. And I had to catch all 100 before he would let me go to bed. And about 98 or 99, I mean, he
was an automatic jugs machine.
Oh, my God. He'd heave one, and I had no chance, and I'd have to start over. It's probably why I felt like I wasn't tough enough to play football. But for me, all I ever wanted to do was play for the Cubs or be a Blackhawk, and to have that opportunity to come in 1984 and to be a rookie in the National Hockey League, and you know, to have gone to the conference finals in my rookie year. And I tell this story, and it's one of the things I remember vividly about my first year in the NHL in the playoffs. I'm skating around in warm-ups. We're playing the Edmonton Oilers. It's game three at the old Chicago Stadium, and we're down 2-0. The first 2 games we lost like 12-3 and 10-5. We got out, I mean, just forget about it. We come back, the Chicago Stadium's up for grabs. It's the middle of May. I'm skating around in warm-ups, and I'll never forget. I'm skating around, and I look into the corner, and I make eye contact with this Chicago legend. I look, and I go, oh, my gosh, that's Gale Sayers. Gale Sayers is sitting, like, fourth row at the old Chicago Stadium. As I'm skating by, I'm going, wow, this must be a big game. Gale Sayers is here to see us. So we ended up winning the next 2 games. Then we lost the next 2, but to have played for my hometown team was something that I'll never forget.
Think about it, though. People must realize this or must understand. You were 18.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were a baby.
Yeah, I was a young 18, kid.
18,
yeah.
That's pretty heady stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was sitting in the locker room, and guys, you know, I thought the old guys were 25, 26. Now sitting at 49, you know, I don't think that's, you know.
But now at this age, do you find it hard to believe that you have teenagers, 20-year-olds that are so competitive, so at playing at such a high class? Is that surprising to you?
I don't think it's surprising to me, Tommy. I think that I always try to, you know, allow my kids to do whatever that they wanted to do. You know, I have one son that played hockey. Now he's an assistant coach at Niagara Hockey-wise. I have a son that's a fifth-year senior at Penn State. I have a daughter that goes to Alabama. She's a junior down there, Roll Tide. I have to say that. Every time I write that check, I write Roll Tide. You know what I mean? So, and then I have a son that's going to go to Colorado College in a couple of years. So they're happy. I never really force my kids to play hockey. I mean, they just wanted to play. Obviously, they were around it all the time. My one son, my son at Penn State, like he had some baseball ability. I think I gave him that. He was a catcher and left-handed hitter. But you know, it's just great to see them doing what they want to do, and they're having fun and they're enjoying themselves. And you know, they miss home though, because they're, you know, even all with all our travels. Like my two oldest sons were born in Toronto. My daughter was born in Connecticut when I played for the Rangers, and my youngest son was born out in L.A. at Cedars-Sinai when I was playing for the Kings. So, Been married 28 years. Yes, Larry, to the same woman.
I was going
to
say.
Okay, yeah. Who brags about being married to three different women for 28 years? So, but I've been very lucky, and Chicago will always be home.
With that being said, your career spanned 16 years. You played for several different teams, and this goes to you as well. Was it hard to give it up as a player?
I knew my last year that it was ready to go. I blew my back out. And I mean, I could have went to Edmonton, actually, for one more year, but as a player, Tommy, you know this, I mean, everything revolves around you and your life, and it's selfish in a way of you're providing for your family. Like, I could have picked everybody up and gone, or I could have left and left my family here, but I didn't want to do that. And I said, you know what, I'm not going to relocate my family for 1 year, maybe two. So it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be, but there was a time about 5 months into my retirement where I picked up the stick and the skates, and I skated for about 5 or 6 weeks because there were a couple of teams that, you know, hey, you know, we're looking for an elder skatesman, somebody that can score some goals and give us some leadership. But it just, the time wasn't right.
You know, I think I had my back operated on too before my last season. So you feel that your body's fit and ready to go. You can walk the streets and look as good as anybody. Then I got inserted into a game. And I remember the recovery after the game was so painful. It was a reminder to myself, look, you're done. You don't have the ability to invest in the offseason, what you realistically need to do to be successful for the long term in the football season. So, like anything, we all get indicators when it's time.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing for me, because I had the surgery in the middle of the year, and I thought I was done for the year. And the team encouraged me, and my head coach at that time, Lauren Mollick, and Danny Savard as well encouraged me, you know, why don't you play? Because I think, and I'm glad I did. Like, I was really against playing the last game of the season. Like, I hadn't played in 3 months, but they really encouraged me to play. I got back into shape, and I was ready to go, and I played my last game. And I'm glad I did now. At the time, I didn't want to do that. You know, I didn't want to kind of feel like, you know, the team was catering to me or anything like that.
Did you always have a guaranteed contract?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You had the initiative to go back, even though you're saying, hey, I have a guaranteed contract, I can wait until you have more belief that you're healthier.
Yeah, and I had the 1 year left on my contract, so I knew that. And I, you know what, just one of those days, I think I just woke up and just said, you know what, okay, I'm gonna give it one last go. And I'm glad I did. I mean, to have played my last game. I played my first game as a Hawk, I played my 1,000th game as a Blackhawk, a lot of games in between, and then I eventually played my last game.
You mentioned toughness, that you wouldn't possibly have the toughness to play football, but you're a big guy for a hockey player, 200-pound guy.
That's a baloney statement.
No, listen,
he's got the toughness.
I know he does. Because here's the thing, hockey? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, right.
Those guys personify toughness in a very unique way. I mean, I'm more and more impressed every day when my daughter Kelly, who Tom knows very well, she became a huge Blackhawks fan with their first championship here with this new regime. And is absolutely invested. She watches every game, loves watching you on NBC as well as Comcast, and knows every player. Yeah. But when I'm watching, not more than I ever have, toughness is the first word that comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know, you're on skates, number one.
Yeah, I think, Jeff, is that when you try to explain to people, and I always encourage people, look, I mean, the transformation that's happened with the Blackhawks has been incredible. I mean, the last professional sports team to put all of their games on television. I mean, think about it. And that's not in the last 20 years. That's in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I think now we've gotten, you know, young fans like your daughter, and you see the people that are watching. And I think that what I try to tell people is, look, it is an intimidating game to watch on television. There's no question about it. It's like being a horse guy. It's like picking up the racing form or going to a craps table, and it's very intimidating. But if you can go to a game in person, I think you get drawn in right away. And it is amazing. You think about it. I mean, you put a pair of boots on and you put butter knives or steak knives on the bottom of them and go out on a sheet of ice and play. I mean, and that's what makes the game so great.
Some of the toughness stories, though, are legendary. I mean, you talk about, I believe it was Jeremy Roenick in a playoff game, got some of his teeth knocked out, comes back in the game. Duncan
think
Keith.
Think nothing of it.
Yeah. Right. Duncan Keith got
He was dunking teeth for a couple of those shifts.
The toughness is incredible, so I have no doubt you could have played. Yeah. But this is a serious question. Do you think that you had the talent to play Major League Baseball? Because, like I said, you dominated at that early age. And I remember even when we were kids, we were always talking about if there was anyone that's going to go to the major leagues, it would have been him.
Is it harder hitting a baseball or a moving puck? It's incredible to me that you guys can redirect a flying puck near the net to make sure it goes in the direction of the net.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I could do it if I tried it 1,000 times.
Did you have more of a passion for hockey, I mean, than baseball?
You know what? My dad still believes that I would have been a better baseball player than
really?
A hockey player.
Now, that's quite a statement.
I trust obviously my dad's opinion. I think, I had to make a career decision at 14 years old. I would have loved the opportunity to play another year of baseball at Brother Rice High School. I would have loved that opportunity to do that. I think I would have had a chance to play. I loved it. I mean, I played pitcher, catcher, shortstop at the same time a couple of games right there. So,
absolutely.
But I would have liked to think that I was given a gift. And I was allowed the opportunity from my folks to be able
Do
to enjoy those passions.
Do you realize what that statement sounds like? You had to make a career choice right. at 14.
I did, because hockey became year-round, Jeff.
It's like that's sad. Gymnasts of today, these young girls.
That's sad. I would never want. Like, I encourage now, because I lived it. I encourage
multiple
to play multiple sports.
Absolutely.
I think it's great for the motor skills, and I think it's good to get away from hockey for a couple of weeks. Most hockey parents think that you should play 13 months a year.
Yeah.
Like, by the time the kid gets to 15, or boy or girl, you know, they don't have the same passion or desire.
How old were you when you went away? Because I know you went away.
Yeah, I left home. I left home when I was 15.
So that being said, did you enjoy your childhood?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah. No, right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We have a coach right back there.
Yeah, right. No, I used to take the Niles free bus over to the Ballard Sports Complex, go to the baseball field. I mean, the one thing that I am sad about is when I drive around. I don't live too far from Hallis Hall, so the drive in today was sweet for me. I drive around in the summertime, and I look at all these baseball fields.
Empty.
And I go, I remember, nobody had a cell phone back in the late 70s, but hey, we're all going to meet up at Ozone Park, or we're going to meet at Memco, or we're going to, and you'd have 30 guys there. You'd have two or three balls, you'd have a couple of bats, and you'd be there for hours.
All day,
and now I look and I go, I wish
it's organized.
Kids would be out
it's
there.
Organized sport. I mean, that's where they're. And then they get away from that and they go play video games and do whatever.
Yeah,
that's the plan
we
right now.
We didn't have video games back then.
You had pinball.
Right.
You had pinball and you had Atari. Right, yeah, you had
but,
Pong
you know,
or whatever.
I mean, families are different, too. Right. If you go back to your neighborhoods, you can have five families that have multiple kids that are major contributors to the neighborhood sports you're playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing getting back to you, when you have to make a career decision, there's one in a million kids that have to make a realistic decision about getting involved in sports. And when I was growing up, Gordy Gillespie was our high school football coach. We had a good football player named Bill Gullickson. And Gordy made him stop playing football because he became the number two pick in the Major League Baseball draft. Mm-hmm. And it's just a recognition of that. But Gordy coached 10,000 kids, 20,000, 30,000 mm-hmm. kids in his lifetime. How many of those kids really have the ability? Yeah. It's like me. I thought I was going to be a running back following in the footsteps of my brother, who was a great running back. He came to me and said, son, your better days are at offensive tackle. And that's a big change when you have the glory of a running back and you're telling a 14-year-old kid, look, you're going to offensive tackle, and that's where your living's going to be. Best decision somebody's ever made for me in my life is to make sure that I wasn't following in the footsteps of an unrealistic goal of being a running back.
I mean, you had to want it too, right? I mean,
the discipline went away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's the one thing. I mean, when I get an opportunity, whether I go back to Brother Rice or I get a chance to be around young people, it's just like, look, I mean, discipline is the one thing that I had in my life. I had it. I had it at home for my folks, and I had it whether it was me training. Nobody had to tell me to go out and throw the ball against the wall. Nobody had to tell me to do that. Nobody had to tell me to go down into my basement. I had my mother yelling at me to stop it every once in a while, but shooting pucks into a mattress that I had in the basement. And I just, I don't think you can teach the want. I really don't think you can. Like, I think you can get all your guidance and your coaching and your teaching, but I think that the players that make it, there's always there somewhere along the line is that they've taken that extra step. And some guys have that God-given gift. I had a gift. It's just whether or not, what did I do with it, whether it was baseball or hockey.
Of all your accomplishments, where does being elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame fit in your life?
Well, I mean, to be recognized by the country that gave me the opportunity to play the game. I mean, it was to have my family and friends and the Blackhawk organization was there. I mean, it was just an incredible I think it was just a feat of I've I've been recognized and I've arrived, even after all my years of playing and all the years I played for the Team USA over the years. It was just it was a great night. It happened to be down in Dallas. I went in with Mike Modano, who's one of the greatest American-born players ever to play, and also Lou Lamoriello now. And Toronto was with the New Jersey Devils for forever. But it was just one of those nights you dream about, and I couldn't be more happy for all the people that helped me along the way. And I still get the gears every once in a while where, you know, we were supposed to only have 15 minutes, but I think I went over by maybe 30. But who's counting?
As you turn to your left and see that emblem right there, what does it mean to you as a Chicago kid?
It takes me back to, I think, what our city's about. Respect. Toughness. And playing for the people and the players that have come before. Like I said, I got a chance to know a lot of the guys back in the day. Did some running back in the day. But to know some of the greatest players that have been a part of our fabric and our city.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody's a Bears fan in this town. And I always wanted that for the Blackhawks, selfishly, as a hockey guy. And I always wonder, you know, could the Blackhawks ever be like the Bears? Because, look, I mean, back in the 60s, you know, the Blackhawks were right up there. I mean, if some people say, you know, they might have had a little bit more on the totem pole than the Bears. But, you know, I mean, I think about all, I mean, obviously Coach Ditka, and, you know, I think about Dick Butkus, and I mentioned Gale Sayers. I mean, that story will stay with me forever to say, you know what, Gale Sayers was there. And he wasn't there to see me play, obviously, but he was there to see the Blackhawks. You know, I mean, from guys like Emery Moorhead and Ted Albrecht, I mean, just guys that I became friendly with over the years. Butthead, I mean, over the years. Tommy, I'm a Chicago guy. I mean, we kind of hit it off. Mike Tomczak, another guy. But to me, I think the Chicago Bears represent what our city is all about, win or lose. We want to be represented the right way, and I think that for the most part, they've always done that.
But, you know, I think for us, now looking on the other side, when I got a chance to meet Keith Magason, reminds me of Dick Butkus. When I saw Dennis Savard spin in his skates, it reminds me of Gale Sayers.
Sure.
So, Doug Wilson, you know, I think the last guy to play without a helmet in the NHL, maybe Doug Wilson.
It was Craig McTavish,
okay.
Actually. Yeah.
But the guys that I got to meet along the way, even though I admired the guys that I was playing with, I being a Chicago guy, I admired the chance to meet up with these great Blackhawks and be a part of learning, before Keith Magnuson passed away, learning about him and getting to know him and having a beer with him and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was neat for this emblem of the Bears emblem to be associated with the emblem of the players that played for the Hawks.
Yeah, it was such a... I mean, any time I get a chance to be around, whether it's, you know, the old guys like myself and Tommy, or, you know, you get to see some of the newer players. But, I mean, even, you know, the guys that helped build these franchises to me. I mean, every time I still see Bobby Hull or Tony Esposito or Stan Mikita, there's always that, you know, I mean, there's that respect factor, you know. And to have seen great players that have come through the Bears and the Cubs over the years, or, you know, maybe seeing like a guy like Bob Love with the Bulls over the years. I mean, I just think for me, I grew up watching these guys and being a fan. I mean, I remember Bob Thomas kicking a field. It was at a local rink. I was at like the Northwest Ice Arena. And I remember it was a brutal day on TV. I think they were at in New York against the Giants.
Yep,
and he kicked a field goal. And I mean, the whole inside the rink was going crazy. I think I had my hockey gear on and just, you know, cheering up and down. I mean, that's what you do. And as a Chicago guy, I mean, I want to see all of our teams do as well as they possibly can.
Yeah, it really jazzes up the city, number one. It gets everybody feeling very good about civically, the pride and so forth, but just the passionate fan base. You know, that's why I love calling the games, because you know the fan base is passionate. I'm passionate about football. I'm passionate about this organization. Last couple of questions here. As analysts, give us some context on how hard you've worked to be good at what you guys are and widely regarded as the top at your profession.
I think it's because you love the game so much that you never lose interest in it. The thing about it is, we talked about these guys that we've seen come along that they have the ability to play, but they don't have the want. I think the want stays with you even though you're done playing. I want to watch Kyle Long get better. I want to watch Christian Jones get better as a linebacker. I want to watch Adrian Amos come here and start as a rookie and have a long-term successful career. So that's the fun part of it, is the desire to still study the game in a learning direction for us, mm-hmm. because things have changed since I've gotten out of the game. Yeah.
Well, I enjoy your guys' chemistry. I mean, I think that's such an important part of the broadcast. I really do. And that helps with the longevity, right? The experience that in that year together. I mean, you know what he's going to say before. And I mean, that's just the way it is. And that's how I feel with my Hall of Fame partner, the great Pat Foley, or I'm doing a national games with Doc Emmerich. I think I've always felt that my job is to tell people why. Have the foresight and foreshadow before something happens or whatever. And to make sure to tell a story and not be the story. I think that you can, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I think that you can send a pretty strong message. So if Corey Crawford gives up a bad goal, I mean, hey, you say it, you have credibility, and you move on. You don't sit there and keep hammering on and hammering on it. I mean, it's, you know, you go back to it. You know, geez, if that play didn't happen, or especially teams gives up another touchdown, was that you can go back to it. But I think we've been players, Tommy, right? And you appreciate when somebody gives you a little bit of love, and then when somebody is it's constructive. And, you know, I've had a couple of issues in my career where I've pointed out things on guys and they've just snapped on me, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. But where were you when I give you a pat on the back the other day? So, and all of a sudden, those 7-foot guys become about a foot and a half. You know, they became mini me pretty quick. but I try to tell the story. I don't ever want to become the story. And I think that if that ever becomes the case, you'll see me in a rearview mirror.
Either of these guys, you guys have never tried to embarrass a player. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. Because you've been in their shoes.
No question.
There's nothing they say that you haven't
experienced. I would always try to, and I mean, Tommy, I can't speak for you, but I just know the person that you are, is that I think, again, we have to tell what's going on. But I think we'll always protect the brand and always protect the player more than anything else. I mean, everybody has to look at. I had a bunch of brutal nights in my career, without question. But I think that is the broadcasters and the voices of the teams, is that we want to protect our guys in a way that is respectful, and the fans certainly know where we're coming from.
Working with those two legends you mentioned, there's nobody better. I mean, there's nobody better. Really, when you think about it, transcending all sports. Uh-huh. You know, Pat Foley, I mean, He's the guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy in town.
Another Chicago guy, by the way, right?
Right. Yeah. And in Doc Emmerich, just his ability to paint what is an artistic piece every game.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
To me, it's the most difficult sport to call.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how the play-by-play guys do it, because as an analyst, you know, you get to look at my cheat sheet there, and you know, okay, 47 blue is, you know, this guy or whatever. I get that chance to do it while I'm looking at my monitors for replays and stuff. But it's a fast game, and you got to be on top of it. And we're not exactly, you know, we did the game at Soldier Field last year, when the Hawks and Penguins played together, played at Soldier Field. And, you know, we were in the TV booth, and I mean, you know, seeing those numbers, and, you know, it's like some of the buildings were, you know, we're 250 yards away from center ice. So, you know, the sleeve numbers don't help you every once in a while. So you got to be on top of it. And I'm amazed at, you know, the ability of play-by-play guys, especially in a National Hockey League.
All right. Well, we had a great time talking. We could spend another hour.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, now that we know he lives close,
we're going to put on a Bears analyst cap for a couple minutes, right?
Please, please. I got a lot of free time, but not that much free time. I got two baby labs at home now.
So names?
Lily and Daisy.
I was thinking something better.
I wanted Pucks and Ponies. But my wife and my daughter were like, no. And then I'm like, and while I'm writing the check, I'm going, no, I can't name the dogs Pucks and Ponies when I'm writing this check for our two new family members.
Well, you always got to think about the names you're yelling out the door out loud when you're trying to get them to come back.
I don't know if
what's wrong with Pucks and Ponies?
But I can imagine you standing on the front step yelling Daisy and,
and Lily. Yeah, right, with my umbrella when it's pouring rain, you know. So
the great Eddie Olczyk, a Hockey Hall of Famer and longtime NHL player with the Blackhawks, and a great, great analysis at top of his profession in his sport in the National Hockey League, both locally and nationally. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you for having me.
For Eddie, Larry Mayer, the star catcher for the Niles Giants, and Tom Thayer, I'm Jeff Joniak. Thanks for watching Chicago Bears Roundtable here from PNC Studio at Halas Hall.